let's return to This Week in America. Here's your host, Rick Bratton.
Welcome back, everybody. Coast to Coast, This Week in America. Did you ever wonder why Air Force Special Operations Command came into being? Many roles and missions of tactical airlift blossomed and grew during the Vietnam conflict to such an extent that the Air Force later established an Air Force Special Operations Command to retain and use those skills. They were combined with skills developed by Air Rescue and Recovery Service outside of the normal range of rescue. The remarkable capabilities of the Lockheed Hercules aircraft made much of it possible. Of course, the normal mission of moving cargo and people was retained, but added to that a number of activities and missions. Memoirs of a Trash Hauler, Vignettes from the Vietnam War by Henry L. Bailey III, Lieutenant Colonel, U.S. Air Force retired, captures the essence of many of these missions. Henry was born in Washington, D.C. When he was 3 and a half, his family moved to Maywood, Illinois. Graduated from Roosevelt University in downtown Chicago, later added master doctoral degrees. Maywood, by the way, unique in that it lost an entire National Guard tank battalion in the Philippines during World War II. There were 13 Gold Star mothers with a total of 27 Gold Stars on his block. His home was located about halfway between Chicago Midway and Chicago O'Hare airports. Early on, he developed a love for aircraft and a desire to fly. After graduation from Roosevelt, he pursued that desire. 6 and a half years of his life are concerned with flying in and to Southeast Asia in the C-130A Hercules and the C-141A Starlifter aircraft. His book contains some of his most notable experiences during that time. Later in his career, he flew Cold War missions in the F-4C and F-4E Phantom Tactical Fighter. Henry L. Bailey III, Lieutenant Colonel, U.S. Air Force retired, and author of Memoirs of a Trash Hauler, Vignettes from the Vietnam War, our guest on This Week in America. Hank, welcome to the program. It's great to have you with us.
Thank you, Rick. It's good to be here.
What a fantastic career that you've had, just an amazing career. We could spend just a couple of hours talking about your background, and you've done such a nice job in capturing some of the standout moments in your book, Memoirs of a Trash Hauler. What was the inspiration to write this book? How did this come about when you decided, I need to write these memories down and to share these?
Actually, there were about three things that did it. I had a fellow friend, Mike Wadowski from Chicago, who asked me to start writing them down. And my wife had said I probably needed to do something because I was having a few nightmares. And so I started to write them down. And as it began to flow out, it started to tell a story, not just my story, but the story of my fellow trash haulers who get in and do so many things and have stories equally as interesting as my own. But when you hear about the war, you hear about the infantrymen, and you should, and you hear about the fighter pilots, and you should, and you hear about the bomber pilots, and you should. But holding all of those up are a bunch of guys that move things and people and anything that's necessary and do essentially odd jobs, which were some of the things that we did, which turned into major missions for the Air Force later. And I thought maybe it would be a good idea to get that out and let people hear about it.
How was this experience like for you? You mentioned you were beginning to have some nightmares, and going back and reliving, did that help the problem, help sort of deal with these memories?
Oh, absolutely. Once I started to write them down, I was bringing them out of the place where I hit them. Yes. I have to say that, because, you know, when we came back from Vietnam, the country was very split over that war, and we got spit on and reviled for having been over there. So myself and most Vietnam vets kind of locked that inside of themselves and didn't talk about it very much, didn't say anything about it. But once I started to write it down and it came out, I could say, these are some fantastic people that I knew, and they did some fantastic things, and they wonderful, and the tales of the things that we did ought to come out and be told. And so I started to send my stories to Air Force Navigator and Observers Association, they have a quarterly newsletter called DR Ahead, and they started publishing my stories. And after a while, I decided maybe I needed to accumulate them all together in one book.
You know, there's so much there, so many stories, remarkable stories in Henri's book. The book is Memoirs of a Trash Hauler. Memoirs is M-E-M-O-I-R-E-S. You can find all of this and link on directly by going to our website, thisweekinamerica.us. His website is memoirsofatrashhauler.com. Get information there and be able to purchase the book there as well. Why do you think, and I want to talk about the name Trash Hauler. It fascinating, sort of captures the essence of what you were doing. Talk about the background of the name and why you think the Trash Haulers became so significant and what they add to the nation's military and the military history.
Well, that was a name that we gave ourselves because we have a saying that says, you call and we haul. And the fact is that the transport aircraft and we haul stuff logistically that people know. But we don't just haul equipment, we haul people. We take troops into and out of combat, sometimes even when the battle is still going on. Make sure that we bring folks home. One of the most edifying roles is getting guys that have been wounded out of where they are and getting them into hospital so that they can heal. And I think one of the best experiences that I ever had in my life was when they dedicated the Vietnam Vets War Memorial in Washington, D.C. I walked with my home state of Illinois, and one Marine came up at first, and he said, where were you in Vietnam? I said, well, you're a Marine. Were you at Khe Sanh? He said, yeah, I was. Were you there? I said, yeah, I supplied you guys and kept going. And he said, stay right here. And he came back with eight of his fellow Marines. And he said, you guys in the Air Force never gave up. You were responsible for keeping us going when we were all cut off. And if you can imagine this, eight Marines gave me a group hug.
Oh, you know, I'm seeing that, and what a memory. That's sort of like, okay, all that I went through is worth it to have that admiration from those soldiers there, knowing how valuable you were to what they did and their survival, quite honestly.
Absolutely. That was just outstanding. It really was.
You know, when you think about what all you went through, do trash haulers have a role in the nation's strategy besides the obvious military one? This is basically, boy, multifunctional, certainly. Is there a role beyond the military?
Oh, very definitely. I can remember back, and this is years ago now, when I was stationed in California and we were flying primarily over to Vietnam. And they were having forest fires there in California. And I suggested to my superiors that the 130 was such a fantastic airplane that they should use that in fighting forest fires. Well, they weren't interested in it at the time, but now I believe the California Guard has quite a task during conflagrations or the fires there in California and dumping fire retardant on those things to try and control them. So it's a... but besides that, when it comes to rescue, and when it comes to hurricane hunting, when it comes to quickly getting supplies over to other countries when they have their emergencies, and getting our special forces teams where they have to go. You know, if it's a long range flight, I think they use the C-17 now. You can see that on SEAL Team if you watch that. But if it's a medium distance flight, they put them in the back of a C-130. Now, I flew an A model, and they're flying H models and J models now. But that aircraft has proven itself time after time and being so easy to fly and so responsive to the controls and being able to get into short places that it's I think it's probably going to be around for quite a while longer.
You know, it's amazing when you look at that, decades old, literally, and it's, technology and aircraft that is still being used and quite functional. With us on the program is Henri L. Bailey III. If you're Googling that, Henri is H-E-N-R-I. The book's available at the usual places, including his website, memoirsofatrashhauler.com. Memoirs is M-E-M-O-I-R-E-S. You can link on directly by going to our website, thisweekinamerica.us. You talk in very loving terms about the significance of the Lockheed Hercules aircraft. Talk about that, because even people that are not real savvy in terms of aviation are familiar with the Lockheed Hercules. Talk about that. This is sort of a legendary aircraft, isn't it?
It is a legendary aircraft, and Lockheed calls their design shop the Skunk Works, but that's one of the best things they ever brought out of the Skunk Works as far as I'm concerned, because first of all, it has a short field takeoff and landing capability, which we used on a daily basis over in Vietnam. If you can imagine an aircraft, a big four-engine cargo aircraft, going into 1,100-foot strip and taking off from 1,100-foot strip for civilians, a Cessna C-150 has a hard time taking off and landing on a strip that's that short, you know? And that's, we're talking about having a fully loaded with probably about 35,000 pounds of cargo on it as well, and going into these remote places where we send our military and making sure that they have the things that they need. But that's also handy when they have hurricanes or tsunamis or things like that. Once they can brush off the landing field and those airplanes come in, they bring in the kind of equipment and supplies and things that people need to stay alive. It's a fantastic airplane.
As you're talking about...
It's as maneuverable as a fighter, and I can say that because I've flown fighters too, and it's just an amazing airplane.
What's it like? What was it like the first few times you actually flew that? Because here's something that sounds revolutionary. It's groundbreaking.
Well, let me make clear. I wasn't a pilot in the 130. I was a navigator, so I was responsible for where we were going and how we got there, and being in control sometimes of communications.
Yes.
In the mission we had as forward air controllers, and doing target studies and research again for defenses and everything. But it was challenging. It was a fun to fly airplane. It was very versatile and could do a lot of different things. And sometimes it got you into places where it kept your adrenaline flowing.
I can imagine that. And you'll find some of those stories in Andre's book, Memoirs of a Trash Hauler. You know, as you're describing that, I'm thinking, what if there had not been a Hercules? This was really life-saving, wasn't it? Not only in terms of directly saving lives, but getting a cargo that was very important into places you might not have been able to get otherwise.
That's true. The only other thing that could have carried some of the things we had over there was the Army's big Chinook helicopter, and it could only hold about one-third to one-half of the cargo we could. But it could get into places where they needed it, but it had distance limitations, and it had weight limitations that we didn't have. And so it would have been a totally different war.
You know, you mentioned that this has been around since like the 1950s. So you're looking at 50, 60, 70 years and still flying. Do they have parts? Are they still available? Are they still viable craft?
It's still in production, Rick. Other airplanes that I flew, for instance, like the F-4C and the F-4E, they're all in the boneyard. They're retired. The C-141A, which was a strategic airlifter, it's in the boneyard. It's been retired. But the versatility of the 130, they keep improving the engines and the props and putting other capabilities into it. And it just keeps on going and keeps on getting the job done.
All of this in Memoirs of a Trash Hauler, Vignettes from the Vietnam War. Our guest, Henri L. Bailey III, He's a lieutenant colonel, United States Air Force retired. Book available wherever books are sold. I'll give you his website once again before we wrap up the program. The book is about you, the crew during Vietnam, what all you went through. With today's young people, they really could learn a lot by reading this book, couldn't they?
I think so, and I hope they can begin to appreciate that there's more to conflict between nations than just the guys that are the spearhead. And I'm taking nothing away from the Marines and the Army and the Special Forces guys to do it. They have an essential job to do. But every spearhead needs a shaft to make it more effective. And that's exactly what the trash haulers do. They take them in, they bring them out, they give them the supplies that they need. And sometimes even, well, the rescue service uses a 130. It has a Y hook on the front. If somebody's running, trying to get away, they have a package they can drop and they can snatch them right out of an environment and keep on going and get them home safely. And that, in the end, that's what everybody's interested in, coming home safely.
Well,
because the job of the military is to protect and defend our culture, and we're proud of it, and we're proud of our country and our people, this is a way to do it and serve.
Well, when you get a group hug from the Marines, you know that you were instrumental in making this war proceed and helping the U.S. military with the important functions that they have. What do you hope readers take away from reading this story? Not just, you know, you're sort of there with you as you're reliving some of these experiences, but it's sort of a history lesson as well, isn't it?
It's a history lesson. It is a lesson in teamwork, as it were. And I think any combat veteran, regardless of service, I'll tell you that. You learn to look at the people that you're serving with just like you look at your brother and your sister. They're family to you. They're close to you. And can't even be closer because, you know, you are trusting each other with your lives and the things that you do. And people can accomplish so much when they work together and they come together to accomplish good. And I hope that that's part of the lesson that they'll take away from it. The most valuable lesson I ever learned in my life, I learned from my grandfather when I was 2 1/2, not when he was 2 1/2. And we were sitting at the breakfast table having tea. He had a cup of tea. I had a glass of milk with 2 teaspoons of tea in it. But anyhow, he told me at that point, he was reading an article and he went over it and he was talking about potential in people's life, and that was a lesson for me to learn. And so I asked him, I said, "Granddaddy, what's the potential in my life?" And he says, "I can't tell you that, son. That's something that's a gift that God gives you, and he'll let you know later on. But I can tell you the responsibility we all have in that life, in this life, and that is, no matter where you are, make sure the world where you are is a better place when you leave it than it was when you got there."
Well, I think mission accomplished, what you were able to do, and all of the people that were by your side as you went through these experiences. The book is so well written. You were such a masterful storyteller. Are you working on something else now, another book?
I'm debating whether I want to work on something that's part of the autobiography of my life. I've lived through a memorable part of American history, born in 1938, coming out of the Depression, going through World War II, the Korean War, the Vietnam War, the Balkans, going through all the social changes in the United States and the changes that have gone past. And we look at it and tie it together and so forth. I'll see how that works out, but that's just a thought in my mind right now. I'm trying to organize that.
You know, it's easy for me to say you should write another book. You're the one that has to spend all the time and go back and put the book together, which is certainly no simple task. I'm going to take a minute or so here at the end. I mentioned growing up in Maywood and what you went through on that neighborhood, 13 Gold Star mothers, 27 Gold Stars on the block. What impact, how old were you at the time, and what impact did that have on your life?
I was 3 1/2 going on 4, and it had a major impact on my life because we were a very, how conglomerates, not the way, but we were a very diverse neighborhood. Let me put it that way. Okay. We had people from all over the world, and World War II was starting, and three of my neighbors across the street were Japanese American, and one of their sons was a playmate of mine. And, you know, then we put Japanese Americans in a internment camp. So they got taken away to do that. And about nine of the people on my block were immigrants from Germany, and we were fighting Germany. And when they saw the Japanese Americans being taken away, they were scared to death of what was going to happen to them. And we had people from the Philippines there, and blacks, and Italians and Irish and so forth. And in fact, one of my best friends was his parents were Czech, and his mother taught my mother how to cook eggplant the right way. But we shared all of these different cultures, and we shared all of this. And my next door neighbor was Mrs. Schultz. She always looked so sad, and I would stop and talk to her, and she enjoyed that. But she was a Gold Star mother. She had had four sons. She lost all four of her sons in World War II. She had four Gold Stars on her flag that was in her window. And she was lonely. And I would just stop and talk to her all the time because she was such a lovely, lovely lady. And she would tell us the story. She said, "My husband and I came here from Germany because of all the wars they always have in Europe, and we thought our future was secure, and now my sons are gone with another war that Germany is involved in." But lovely, lovely, lovely lady. And, you know, my scoutmaster, you know, later in life, had been in the tank battalion that went off to Bataan. And the whole battalion went to Bataan. He had retired just before they got activated and sent to Bataan. And only three of those men ever came back, you know, so forth. So we were very much involved with where the country was going, and patriotism and love of the nation and love of each other. It was amazing for the times back in the early 1940s. It was the love that the neighbors had for each other in that neighborhood. It was great.
Well, you talk about a melting pot here. You lived in that neighborhood, was a melting pot. I mean, what a diverse group that you had there, and obviously added to your perspective as you grew up and served in the military and here today. After hearing those stories, I do hope you do the book. I have no pressure, but I would love to read it and have you back to be able to talk about that. The book that's out there now is just it's receiving rave reviews, and justifiably so. Memoirs of a Trash Hauler, Vignettes from the Vietnam War. Memoirs, M-E-M-O-I-R-E-S. Our guest, the author, Henry L. Bailey III, that's H-E-N-R-Y. L. Bailey III, Lieutenant Colonel, U.S. Air Force, retired. His website is memoirsofatrashhauler.com. You'll find the book at Amazon, the usual places. Go to our website. You can link on directly to Henry's website, and you'll get all the information. You can order the book there in a number of forms. I understand what hardcover, softcover, ebook, whatever you want, whatever format you're used to, you'll find your book in it.
That's right, Rick, and I really appreciate the opportunity to sit here and talk to you about it and what it has to offer. And I do thank you so much for this opportunity.
Well, I appreciate you coming on and sharing some of the memories, and you'll find many, many more in the book, Memoirs of a Trash Hauler. Our guest in the program, Henry L. Bailey III. I thank you again, sir, for being with us on the program. Information on our website, thisweekinamerica.us. And we're back on today's program after these messages.
You're listening to This Week in America with Rick Bratton. More after this.